From the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, that is, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Friday, April the 5th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Be there yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. And since it is Hawaiian Shirt Friday, let's do the Hawaiian Shirt Friday fight song. Sing it loud, sing it proud. Sweetest sound this side of heaven, to be sure. Let's get things started officially here with
the Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. Good one here, too. It says, a real friend is someone who takes a winter vacation on a sun-drenched beach and doesn't send a card. Yeah, with that lame old line, wish you were here, right? Just know that I thought about you while I was gone.
How about I hold your head underwater for just a little while?
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted history.
That's it, right?
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
Oh, to be sure.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same. You need to know your twisted history.
Yes, you do.
You might be quizzed.
Well, there you go. Well, kids, it was on this day in 1792, President George Washington exercised his authority to veto a bill. First time this power was ever used in the United States. I think he vetoed a bill preserving cherry trees. I don't know. I don't know that that's true. And it was on this day in 1991, the space shuttle Atlantis launched to deploy the Compton Gamma Ray Observatory. And it has been busy observing gamma rays ever since.
Staggers the imagination.
My mission statement, if I had one, would be that I am not a news site. It's not my quest to bring you the latest news. It's my quest to bring you the most relevant news to issues that that affect us on the right. And such is the case with this story that actually took place late last week. The mainstream media, of course, would not report on it because it doesn't fit their agenda. But we have a red state governor who basically slammed the door on liberals, vetoing a truckload of bills to protect one big right. And as Sean Curvin wrote about it in the PJ newsletter, he said, leftists are constantly working multiple angles. We've seen it time and time again to undermine the God-given rights of American citizens. And these radicals, and that's what they are, they're radicals, stepped up their tactics to legally undermine the Constitution and oppress the people of this country. Now, those are lofty terms, but you can't put it any more accurately than that. So naturally, we conservatives often face this uphill battle against leftist politicians who hold pretty powerful positions in state governments. The only hope to save constitutional rights is for elected conservative officials to stand up and take on the onslaught of leftist oppression. And one traditionally blue state recently faced a tidal wave of Democrat-sponsored bills designed to eliminate a fundamental right of Americans. Virginia lawmakers swamped the Republican governor's desk with bills to undermine the Second Amendment. Now, the way the Daily Wire reported on it, they said Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin vetoed 30 gun control bills on Tuesday afternoon. Now, this was a week ago Tuesday, all right? Using his perch as a Republican governor to restrain Democrats from taking the state in a leftward direction, despite the party having taken full control of the legislature in November. And Youngkin said in a statement, I swore an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States of America and the Constitution of Virginia. And that absolutely includes protecting the right of law-abiding Virginians to keep and bear arms. Now, Youngkin was thorough in rejecting the batch of bills, because this is how the left plays the game. They have a stack of bills, and hidden in the bills, hoping no one will read it, is a provision that would outlaw guns in one form or another, okay? And naturally, they hope nobody reads it. Well, it always gets found out. They've done this on the federal level, I don't know how many times. So He was thorough in rejecting this batch of bills, and these included banning gun possession at public colleges, home-based firearms dealers near schools, limiting concealed carry permit reciprocity with other states, and a waiting period to purchase guns. And the governor described proposed bills as unconstitutional, duplicative, and vague, and some bills were similar to ones that had been overturned by courts when implemented in other states. Scott Youngkin is turning out to be a good governor for Virginia. And he described concealing carry permit holders as known for being law-abiding citizens in the Commonwealth, and said the Commonwealth should prioritize prosecution and severe punishment for individuals who commit crimes. Because you see, this is the aim of the left. The aim of the left is to make gun owners criminals by default, making them criminals just for owning a gun. Now, Virginia was once solidly controlled by Republicans in the legislature, and this status was held for decades before population growth in Northern Virginia in recent years supported voters turning the Commonwealth into essentially a blue state. And Democrats were able to gain total control of the legislature in 2019. So this created a political environment that championed a surge of far-left actions. Now, Youngkin came onto the scene in 2021 and mounted a surprise victory. I'll never forget this. I mean, everybody in the mainstream media, their heads were spinning. You know, like the girl in The Exorcist, right? And that victory was backed by voters who rebelled against the liberal legislature. Because the legislature got in there, and I mean, it was turned totally left, and the people of Virginia were getting sick and tired of their shenanigans. So Youngkin was joined in his victory by the House of Delegates returning to Republicans. And Democrats in the Senate pledged to be a brick wall that would stop Youngkin from advancing his policies. Well, it hasn't turned out that way. Democrats mounted a comeback, took the House, and retained the Senate in November. And their efforts to again push their liberal agenda were then met with Youngkin taking on the role of a brick wall against the legislature. And he's now blocked the Democrats' current proposed budget, which would raise taxes. They always do it that way, you know. So Youngkin basically displayed his resolve last week through the dozens of vetoes that soundly demonstrated that Democrats would have to work with the Republican governor to get bills passed. You see, moderation and compromise are going to be the order of the day to get the government business completed. But it sure is nice to watch. It's nice to see one good, courageous, conservative governor stand up against the thugs on the left. Here's another story you won't hear, likely, in the mainstream media, and that is Nebraska State Senator Mike McDonnell has announced that he's switching party affiliation from Democrat to Republican, citing his Christian faith and views on abortion. That's usually what triggers this sort of thing. Now, Mr. McDonnell made the announcement in an April 3rd statement to local media outlets, April 3rd being Wednesday, citing the Democrat Party's opposition to his pro-life stance. Let's quote him here. He says, "When I ran for re-election in 2020, I was pro-life." And then he added that he's Catholic, and recalling that in 2016 he ran as a pro-life candidate for Nebraska's 5th Legislative District. Remember, running as a Democrat, running pro-life, and he won. Then he says, "I've asked the Democratic Party to respect my religious-based pro-life position. Instead, over the last year, they've decided to punish me for being pro-life." Now, think about that concept. You're a somewhat prominent member of a political party, the Democrat Party, and your party's not going to back you up in your pro-life stance. What does that say about the party? I mean, it really speaks volumes about the immorality of the Democrat Party. So McDonnell said that because he opposes abortion, Douglas County Democrats voted not to seat him as a delegate and not share party resources, while the state Democratic Party voted to censure him for his pro-life views. So, you know, really, this is so predictable. And then he said, being a Christian member of the Roman Catholic Church and pro-life is more important to me than being a registered Democrat. Then he added that he was switching to the GOP effective immediately. Well, the Nebraska Democrat Party issued a statement in response, and they expressed respect for his work with the party while denying that the censure vote had anything to do with his pro-life views, which naturally you would expect them to do. Of course they're going to deny that. Nebraska Democratic Party Chair Jane Klebe said in a statement, "The Nebraska Democrat Party will continue to stand up for reproductive freedom and the human rights of the LGBTQ community. Our decision to censure Senator McDonnell was never about him being a pro-life Catholic. Our decision was based on our party reaffirming our core values to protect women's ability to make health decisions and to keep politicians out of our personal health decisions." Now, here again, allow me to point out that what's key here in their message is women's health. Because somehow Democrats equate the right to have an abortion with women's health. And really, abortion has very little to do with women's health. True, there are situations where a woman needs an abortion to save her life. It's either the child or the mother's life. And in situations like that, you really need to do some heavy-duty thinking, some heavy-duty decision-making in that. Because, yes, morals are involved. But the Democrats, the left, always equate the right to have an abortion with women's health. That's a woman's health issue. And nothing could be further from the truth. I find it very aggravating, too. So anyhow, Democrat Party Chair Ms. Klebe said that she and her Nebraska Democrat colleagues respect the ongoing work of Senator McDonnell on behalf of unions and his commitment to protect a fair electoral vote system in the state. Now, McDonnell's party affiliation switch could signal that Nebraska may be headed for a major change, as Republican leaders have expressed support for a move to a winner-take-all system for allocating the state's electoral college votes. That just went down the other day. That did make big news with the mainstream media. So what that involves is Nebraska Governor Jim Pillen, a Republican, showed a willingness back on Tuesday to back legislation that would potentially prevent President Biden from getting one of the state's electoral votes. And he did this by endorsing a statewide winner-takes-all system that's quite likely to boost former President Trump. See, now, unlike every other U.S. state, only Nebraska and Maine assign electoral college votes by district. A congressional district that centers around Omaha, the largest city in the state, has sometimes gone in favor of Democratic presidential candidates, including in 2020. But if the state switched to a more standard system, Nebraska's three electoral votes would likely all go to President Trump, as Trump easily won the GOP-dominated state by wide margins in both 2016 and 2020. Back in January, legislators introduced a bill to use the standard winner-take-all system in a social media post April 2nd. Again, that was on Tuesday. Mr. Pillen endorsed the initiative. He wrote on X, "It would bring Nebraska into line with 48 of our fellow states, better reflect the founders' intent, and ensure our state speaks with one unified voice in presidential elections. I call upon fellow Republicans in the legislature to pass this bill to my desk so I can sign it into law." So it looks like it's going to be a done deal. His comment was backed by President Trump, of course, who described the governor's endorsement of the measure as very smart. And posting, Tuesday, Trump said, "Governor Jim Pillen of Nebraska, very smart and popular governor, who's done some really great things, came out today with a very strong letter in support of returning Nebraska's electoral votes to a winner-take-all system. Most Nebraskans have wanted to go back to this system for a very long time because it's what 48 other states do, it's what the founders intended, and it's right for Nebraska. Thank you, Governor, for your bold leadership. Let's hope the Senate does the right thing. Nebraskans, respectfully ask your senators to support this great bill. Now, in 2020, Biden won Nebraska's Omaha-based congressional district, so it gave him one electoral vote. And President Trump carried the state with nearly 60% of the vote. And then, of course, you have your analysts, some of whom have said on social media that if the Nebraska bill is signed into law, it would pose a problem for President Biden because he wouldn't have a clear path to 270 votes to win the presidency. But then again, that's the point, isn't it? I don't know if you're seeing things the same way I'm seeing them. Perhaps you are. And that is that President Biden's going around the country making all of these gaffes, making these stupid decisions and sniffing babies and the whole bit. And then Donald Trump, all he has to do is kind of go around behind Biden and mock everything that Biden has done. Now, Trump responded to Biden's blasphemous proclamation of Easter Sunday as Transgender Day of Visibility while speaking at a rally in Green Bay, Wisconsin, Tuesday. This was epic. And, devout Catholic Joe Biden prioritized transgenders, who he ironically said are made in the image of God. Did this over the holiest of Christian holidays last Sunday. And mainstream media didn't have any choice. They had to report it. To make matters worse, Biden issued his proclamation on Good Friday, seemingly to spark outrage and diminish the importance of Holy Week. And how he can do this while proclaiming all the time that he's a devout Catholic? He's nothing. He's nothing of the kind. He's a devout Joe Biden fan. That's what he is. He's in it. He's in life for himself. Anyhow, Biden also, and this is another point we need to make, because this was never made in the mainstream media. Biden also banned any Christian-themed designs from being submitted to the White House Easter-themed art contest. And that was actually Jill Biden's doing. So, one of my favorite publications, the Gateway Pundit, reported that Trump's campaign responded to Biden over the weekend, saying, "It's appalling and insulting that Joe Biden's White House prohibited children from submitting religious egg designs for their Easter art event and formally proclaimed Easter Sunday as Trans Day of Visibility. They further called on Biden and White House to issue an apology to the millions of Catholics and Christians across America who believe tomorrow is for one celebration only, the resurrection of Jesus Christ." And then on Tuesday, Trump made a proclamation of his own. And this was where it really got good. He said, "November 5th is going to be called Christian Visibility Day, when Christians turn out in numbers that nobody's ever seen before." A typical Trumpian superlative there. And Trump spoke at two separate rallies on Tuesday, one in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and then across Lake Michigan to Green Bay, Wisconsin. Now, in Michigan, Trump addressed another failure of the Biden regime, Biden's border bloodbath. That's what he called it. And this was just days after an illegal alien from Mexico who'd been deported by the Trump administration in 2020 was charged in the March 22nd murder of 25-year-old Ruby Garcia, whose bullet-riddled body was found dumped on a Grand Rapids highway. And you see, the lawlessness that we have found so prevalent in this country since Joe Biden has become president has hit every corner of the country. So no matter where President Trump goes to speak, there's an incident like this that he can showcase. I mean, you talk about a built-in winning presidential campaign. Meanwhile, Sleepy Joe stayed in the basement after a long weekend of celebrating transgenders. And when Biden appeared at the annual White House Easter egg roll, he slurred, he stumbled, he wandered around. And he also repeatedly sniffed at least one baby. I saw this on video, sickening. I don't know what that is about. What is this sniffing people thing he's got? Man. And Trump's top advisor, Jason Miller, called it a Well, I can't repeat the term, but you get the idea. So Trump, in his official statement to the crowd, he said, we're going to win the White House and we're going to save our country. We're going to save our country. And what the hell was Biden thinking when he declared Easter Sunday to be Trans Visibility Day? Such a total disrespect to Christians. November 5 is going to be called something else. You know what it's going to be called? Christian Visibility Day. When Christians turn out to vote in numbers that nobody's ever seen before, let's call it Christian Visibility Day. I've just come from Grand Rapids, Michigan, where I was proud to receive the endorsement of the police. Donald Trump, from your lips to God's ears, because if he doesn't win, this country is going to be in deep trouble. But I hate to have to say this. I think what's actually going to happen is, no matter who wins, if Joe Biden gets back in, I predict that Biden's not even going to be running. They're going to have somebody else in on this. But no matter who wins, I'm afraid there's going to be a fair amount of violence throughout the country. I mean, face it, my friend, we're going downhill, and we're going downhill quickly. And you're hearing this from a guy who grew up in the 50s and 60s. I've seen a lot. But I have never, ever, not even during the Jimmy Carter years, ever seen this country this low before. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg used a faulty analogy on Fox News to taunt Americans for refusing to buy these overpriced, environmentally damaging electric vehicles. But Americans on social media gave the bozo and elitist Buttigieg a brutal reality check afterward. Buttigieg was a guest on America's Newsroom with John Roberts and Sandra Smith the other day when he embarrassed himself. And Roberts opened by telling Buttigieg about the collapsing Tesla sales.
Tesla sales fell 8.5% the first quarter of this year. Ford this week is laying off two-thirds of its workforce at the F-150 electric Lightning plant. It's also scaling back a battery production facility because of sagging sales. EV sales are nowhere near what this president wanted or expected. Yet the administration continues to shove them down consumers' throats. Why?
Well, let's be clear. Consumers have wanted and purchased more EVs every single year than the year before. And, you know, Tesla is facing more competition as GM and Ford and Stellantis and other competitive players start to make sure they get a piece of the EV market. Let's be clear that the automotive sector is moving toward EVs, and we can't pretend otherwise. Sometimes when these debates happen, I feel like it's the early 2000s, and I'm talking to some people who think that we can just have landline phones forever.
It was after that things got really interesting. Social media users jumping in on the flaws in Buttigieg's arguments. There were reasons why cell phones were better than landlines, whereas EVs have several drawbacks compared to gas-powered cars, and the only way for EVs to be competitive is to crack down on traditional vehicles. Let me give you a little for instance. I just recently moved to the small town of Liberty, Texas. This is about 50 miles east of Houston. And small town, yes, less than 10,000 people, and I've yet to see an electric vehicle out here. There is electric nothing out here. Except the electricity to power your homes, which we have plenty of. But it's amazing that you have the government trying to shove this down our throats, these EVs. And why? Because of what I was talking about in yesterday's podcast. And that is the squeaky wheel, the lefties, the bozos, the yahoos. They're so shrill and so noisy, and the politicians don't have the courage to stand up to them with something called the truth. Some of the comments on social media to Pete Buttigieg. No, Pete, your analogy is so far off base. Where is the electric grid that's going to sustain this increased energy need? Where are the charging stations along the interstate? What about the safety issues? The batteries can't deal with salt water and spontaneously combust. Here's another comment. Classic liberal glib response to socialist market intervention that no one wants. Well, that's very true. Here's another one. Not everyone wants an electric vehicle, period. You cannot force anyone to buy one. I'm just saying. And here's one from somebody called in, Don't Call Me Shirley. Says, does Pete Buttigieg, the Secretary of Transportation, actually think landline phones are not a thing anymore? Has Pete ever looked at the phone on Joe Biden's desk? Or is he too busy kneeling under Joe Biden's desk? Good comment. Little crass, but good. I like it. It has my approval. And, oh, here's a good one. I genuinely don't think Democrats know how electricity is made. And, you know, there's probably a lot more truth to that than we are aware. Matt Grilly posted, I lived most of my life in Philly, and my block only had parking on the other side of the street. How could I have charged an electric vehicle? There are millions of people like me. Oh, yeah. Well, you just can't beat the convenience of a gas-powered car. And if you're going to go, if you're going to find yourself moving away from gasoline-powered cars, you really need to look seriously at what Toyota's working on, hydrogen-powered vehicles. I mean, they really have been working on it. Not only that, Toyota is getting away from EVs. They've announced that they are. I mean, they've actually gone as far as to say on a very public stage, we're getting away from EVs. It's stupid technology. It's just not going to work. It's not because I want it that way. It's because that is the fact. If I knew that electric cars were going to work and that they were going to be practical and that they were going to be affordable and that they were going to be sustainable, I'd be all for it. Let's head on over to the Comedy Corner with Danny Johnson.
I have gained and lost a lot of weight in my lifetime. As a matter of fact, I've gained and lost so much weight in my lifetime. If you go in my closet, I have three wardrobes. I have fat, chusky, and 1982. I'm hoping to slim down, get to them Z Cavaricis I've been hanging on to. Yeah! You gotta get the flap over. I made the mistake of becoming friends with people that run voluntarily. They're very passionate people, if you haven't met. You gotta run, Danny. Oh my gosh, so much fun. You have to run, Danny. So much exhilarating. You gotta run. Because they have all that oxygen they got. Do you know why I don't run? Because I own a car. I will see you over there. Sometimes I go to marathons and stand at the end with my keys. Hey, look at me! Danny, just do a 5K, right? I was like, I can do a 5K. Because they tried to get me to do more, like 5K, 10K, half marathon, marathon. Then they have these tough mutter runs where you run through 24 obstacles and you get electrocuted and fired. You punch a bear. So I'm like, five is a tiny number. I could probably do that. And they're like, good news, Danny. 5K actually means 3.1 miles. I'm like, three is less than five. I don't even need to train for this thing. It's a lot longer than you think it is. Danny, you're going to get a runner's high, right? We've all heard of the runner's high. It's halfway through the race, your body and mind. It's going to be numb. You're just going to run and finish it. I found the runner's high passed out in the bushes. Staring up at the lights. Take me. I tried to treat it like a video game. Like I thought if I could just catch one person and beat them, maybe hip check them into the bushes or something. Like an oil slick or banana peel, something. If I could just catch one, like one guy could not catch the whole race. Every corner, I just couldn't catch him. He was in his late 80s.
That's it. Make it a great weekend. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on Monday's bombastic blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?